Psalm 127. We're going to be looking at Psalms 127 and Psalm 128. Imagine you are a Jew living in the diaspora, living somewhere outside of Palestine. You're coming to Jerusalem. Maybe it's the Feast of First Fruits. And you're coming for this feast to recognize what God has done, how God has been with you. You're thinking about the covenant that God made with his people long ago. You're thinking about what it meant when he said, I'm going to bless you when you're faithful. Or I'm going to curse you when you're unfaithful. You're thinking about things back home as you're on your way to Jerusalem, thinking about things and how they've gone. Has your life been one of blessings or one of curses? What does that mean in your relationship with God? What does that mean about God? I mean, you may be there singing some of these songs. And I would imagine that Psalms 127 and 128 might have been some of their favorites to sing as they approached Jerusalem, thinking about God's blessing. Let's read Psalm 127 and 128. We'll read them straight through together. A song of ascents of Solomon. Unless the Lord builds the house, those who build it labor in vain. Unless the Lord watches over the city, the watchman stays awake in vain. It is in vain that you rise up early and go late to rest, eating the bread of anxious toil, for he gives to his beloved sleep. Behold, children are a heritage from the Lord, the fruit of the womb a reward. Like arrows in the hand of a warrior are the children of one's youth. Blessed is the man who fills his quiver with them. He shall not be put to shame when he speaks with his enemies in the gate. Psalm 128, a song of ascents. Blessed is everyone who fears the Lord, who walks in his ways. You shall eat the fruit of the labor of your hands. You shall be blessed, and it shall be well with you. Your wife will be like a fruitful vine within your house. Your children will be like olive shoots around your table. Behold, thus shall the man be blessed who fears the Lord. The Lord bless you from Zion. May you see the prosperity of Jerusalem all the days of your life. May you see your children's children. Peace be upon Israel. I think you can get some sense of some of the positivity in these psalms about God's blessing. Repeated themes of work and provision, of family, and as is fitting with Psalms of Ascents, work and family and some connection back to the city, back to Zion. May you be blessed. May the Lord bless you from Zion. The place where God has made his name to dwell, the place where he had his temple, would be a reminder to them of the covenant that they had entered. And they would be go to these feasts and be reminded of God's provision. When the Israelites would work to plant their fields and harvest their crops, and then they come and they get those, they'd come and have those first fruits from that harvest. They would come, and what would they do with those first fruits? They'd come to Jerusalem carrying some basket and offering the first of those crops, those things you'd worked so hard for, that you'd waited for, and you'd give the first of that to the Lord. Deuteronomy 26, you can refer back to, teaches them to do this, to give the first fruits to God. And it would be a reminder that it was God who gave them the land in the first place, God who had given the increase and really given them that fruit, and God who would then continue to provide for them. It was God who was giving them the work, the land to work, and the land to rest. When they would think about blessings that they had received, what was the significance when they thought about blessings from God? It's easy just to think of blessing as nice things from God, comfortable things from God, but it meant something more than just the things God was giving you. It meant something about the condition of your relationship with God. So that the covenant God made with Israel was that I would bless you as a nation when you were faithful, and I would curse you when you were unfaithful. And I wanted to note some of this ahead of time to preempt one of the problems if we aren't careful with this, and that is to see the blessings and curses in a context where it's not a categorical guarantee that God will always give an Israelite exactly what they want if they're faithful, and always give them curses when an individual Israelite is unfaithful. So in Psalm 128, in verse 2, you shall eat the fruit of the labor of your hands, you shall be blessed, and it shall be well with you. Sounds like a categorical guarantee that every individual in Israel could take to the bank. But the nation of Israel was in this covenant with God. They had corporate blessings and curses. The nation would be blessed and cursed based on the national faithfulness of Israel. And so there would be the wicked few who would be prosperous and in time of blessing, maybe. A time where there was faithfulness in Israel, the wicked few would be benefiting from that, perhaps. And the righteous few, in a time when Israel was unfaithful and rebellious, the righteous few would have to endure some of the curse of being a nation that was unfaithful to God, facing the consequences of unfaithfulness. So even under the Old Covenant, these were not categorical guarantees of blessing for every righteous individual. So I want to clarify that going into it, that even in the Old Testament, they shouldn't read Psalm 128 and say, God is always going to make my life easy if I'm faithful to him. And so it shouldn't be that hard then when we get to the New Testament to understand that continues to be the case. God doesn't guarantee blessing for every individual in their lifetime as they're faithful to him. But those blessings point to a greater truth, okay? The blessings point to a greater truth, because it's not about what we get from God, it's but about signaling the condition of our relationship with God. And so those signals will be imperfect. They won't always tell us exactly what our relationship is with God. If things are going bad, you might be faithful to God. But it's about, at the end of the day, am I faithful to God? That's what is most important. That's the blessing that's most important. Is God with me, regardless of the circumstances that I'm facing? And that's what those blessings and curses were meant to teach them to care about. What is their relationship with God? So, with these psalms, Psalm 127, 128, what I want to do is have us thinking about how family and work, those kinds of things, can be a curse if we're unfaithful, and they can be a blessing for faithfulness. And with the caveat of not saying that there's some guarantee corresponding, going to have an easy work life and lots of success if you're faithful, that's not what we're getting at here. Hopefully you'll see where we're going. But there's vanity in work and in family that is indicated even by these psalms that really, I think, generally are positive and feel rather nice to read. But it says that those who build the house, in 127 verse 1, they labor in vain. If any of us were to post this on our home somewhere, and maybe you do, and it's good to have on your home, so nothing against that. But let's say you had the verse, unless the Lord builds the house, those who build it labor in vain. You've put a curse on your house. That's okay. Like the covenant with Israel, God had blessings and curses built in to enter a relationship with God. They put blessings and curses that they agreed to. Consequences for unfaithfulness. You've put a curse on your home. If you have put the verse, unless the Lord builds the house, the one who builds it labors in vain. Because the thrust of this sentence is not the unless clause, that's the conditional clause, unless the Lord builds a house. The thrust of the sentence is those who labor in vain. The one who builds it labors in vain. If your home, if your family, if your life is not allowing God to be the one who's building it, then what are you saying? You're saying, then it's all vain. That if God isn't the one building my home, building my life, then I'm saying it's all vain. You can see that vividly play out in Israel's story, in Israel's history. When Israel was unrighteous and unjust, when they didn't seek the Lord, as they built themselves of a nation, as a nation, and each family built themselves up, When they turned away from God and looked to idols and other things, God took away the homes that they built. And you can find this theme in a number of places, but God will talk about that things that they built, things that they planted, they will be taken away. So Amos 5:11 is one of those. I'll just read that real quick. Therefore, because you trample on the poor and you exact taxes of grain from him, you have built houses of hewn stone, but you shall not dwell in them. You have planted pleasant vineyards, but you shall not drink their wine. They're facing the curses. Hey, you built these houses, you planted these vineyards, but you've done so in vain because you've been trampling the poor and so on. And listen to what God had said back in, and you can turn there if you like, Deuteronomy 28. Back in the covenant that he was reminding them of and reiterating for this generation about to go into the land, what would happen when they persisted in rebellion down the road? Deuteronomy 28, verses 30 through 34. This is what Amos was reminding them of and showing that what would happen. Just like they agreed to. They agreed to the curse, the curses for unfaithfulness. Deuteronomy 28, verse 30. You shall betroth a wife, but another man shall ravish her. You shall build a house, but you shall not dwell in it. You shall plant a vineyard, but you shall not enjoy its fruit. Your ox shall be slaughtered before your eyes, but you shall not eat any of it. Your donkey shall be seized before your face, but you shall not be restored to you. Your sheep shall be given to your enemies, but there shall be no one to help you. Your sons and your daughters shall be given to another people, while your eyes look on and fail with longing for them all day long, but you shall be helpless. A nation that you have not known shall eat up the fruit of your ground and all of your labors, and you shall be only oppressed and crushed continually, so that you are driven mad by the sights that your eyes see. Your labor will be vain, unless the Lord builds the house. The point is, if you build and work by yourself, for yourself, it is futile. And it will all be taken from you. And so Psalm 127 gives you a sense of this anxious toil and this vain work. Verse 1, again, of Psalm 127. Unless the Lord builds the house, those who build it labor in vain. Unless the Lord watches over the city, the watchman stays awake in vain. Have you worked and felt like it was useless? Does it life and relationships ever feel like you're trying to protect yourself, you're trying to protect those around you through sleepless nights, not even knowing if you'll really even be able to address the problems that come along? Verse 2, again, it is in vain that you rise up early and go late to rest, eating the bread of anxious toil, for he gives to his beloved sleep. Do you stress about getting up early tomorrow and then find yourself in the same situation the next day, still anxious the next day? Do you eat the bread of anxious toil? That line just kind of encapsulates this aspect for me. You're eating the fruits of your labor, and it's like, well, now I should be able to just relax and enjoy things. The fruit of our labor, we've done it. But it's just the bread of anxious toil. It doesn't feel like any kind of blessing. Have you done that? Have you taken the vacation? Gone on the date? Have you done the thing to enjoy life finally, and it just feels as vain as the work you were doing? Our anxiety, our ambition can turn to just an all-consuming anxiety. Matthew 6, Jesus talks a lot about anxiety, and I want to cover all of that there. But verse 27, he says, "And which of you, by being anxious, can add a single hour to his span of life?" Our worrying does not result in a healthier or longer life. But when we are just working by our own strength and for our own purposes, there's nothing left for us but anxiety and no reward, even in the things that we ought to be able to enjoy. And then, admittedly, in terms of family, these psalms are very positive. Okay, talk about how it would be vain to build and so on. But I do think that there's implication here not just talking about the building of houses, but maybe the building of homes. That it would be vain. Though it says things about blessing for family, where the emphasis probably should be. Maybe they're told that there's blessing in family because they have the same tendency that we can have. And that is to turn the blessing of family into all just vain burdens. Solomon, notice, is the author there of Psalm 127. Do you think he knows something maybe about challenges and burdens of family? His own brothers competing for the throne? Much of the wreckage that came ever since David's sin with Bathsheba. Solomon knew something about the way Satan can work in families and the vanity that can feel. And maybe there's a hint of what we get out of Ecclesiastes, all the vanity that's said there, that we could see Solomon talking about now here in Psalm 127. There's no avoiding the sense that family can be a burden. Okay. I think in the context of the worthwhile debate of protecting the unborn, that sometimes we might so emphasize that children are indeed rightfully a blessing from the Lord that we might actually feel uncomfortable ever talking about children as a burden. It would be wrong to leave the emphasis there, for sure. But children can be a burden, and it be obvious that it's wrong to kill them. Money, time, sleepless nights, catching every virus known to man, bickering, whining, bad attitudes, which sound trivial, but you know, they drive you mad, don't they? We drive ourselves mad, don't we? It's hard. And the metaphors he uses are beautiful, but I think, for me, that they gain purchase because they actually speak to some of the ways that they can be a burden and things can feel useless. And he's taking that idea and taking it to a positive angle on it, rightfully so. But we're not going to the positive angle yet. Olive shoots in Psalm 128, in verse 3, end of verse 3. They're olive shoots. You know how many olives you get from an olive shoot? You know, take those to the farmer's market and make a bunch of money? No. They're fruitless. They contribute nothing. Children are fruitless sprouts. Olives don't bear until 3 to 5 years. Nothing substantial until 78 years. Olives are actually doing pretty good, it looks like now. In slow-growing trees, we looked at a couple sources, so my research was sparse on an illustration, but a steady yield, so an annually consistent yield, might be a 65-year-old tree that you're waiting for that. Children take more than they contribute. It's just the plain fact. Now, again, we can speak positively about the warm feelings we have, but on some of the cold, hard things, money, time, sleeplessness, all of that, they take more than they give. And they're burdensome. So verses 4 and 5 talk about of Psalm 127. They're like arrows in your hand, the hand of a warrior, like a quiver full of arrows. Like that, again, it's turning this idea to a positive thing, but it's giving some validity to a burden. You're carrying these things. Your quiver is loaded. I think about going on a hiking trip and you load your backpack, but you don't want to load it too much because you need some of these things and you don't want to be found caught without them in some kind of survival situation, but it is a burden. What can't you do anymore that you used to do? Where can't you go anymore that you used to love to go? What life options did you close the door to when you had a child. And if the Lord isn't the one building the house, it only gets worse. And it's not just teenagers. Like, oh, that's just a necessary evil, and then you'll get the rewards after that. No, if the Lord isn't building the house, it gets worse. With children who either want to forget about you or will remind you that all of the problems in their lives all come back to the way you raised them. Now, if you don't have kids, I just want to make you feel included here. So, people close to you, whatever the nucleus you have, people close to you can be a burden, can't they? But of course, that is not the emphasis of these psalms. Okay, the emphasis is, okay, when we moved on from if the Lord hadn't built the house, but if the Lord builds a house, is really the picture here. Now, let's go over to Deuteronomy 28 real quick. Deuteronomy 28 again, but look at the blessing there for the covenant of Israel. Verses 1 through 6. Again, this is their special covenant, and everything doesn't come over into our current situation in literal physical ways. But verse 1, "And if you faithfully obey the voice of the Lord your God, being careful to do all his commandments that I command you today, the Lord your God will set you high above all the nations of the earth, and all these blessings shall come upon you and overtake you if you obey the voice of the Lord your God. Blessed shall you be in the city, and blessed shall you be in the field. Blessed shall be the fruit of your womb, and the fruit of your ground, and the fruit of your cattle, and the increase of your herds, and the young of your flocks. Blessed shall be your basket and your kneading bowl. Blessed shall you be when you come in, and blessed shall you be when you go out." This is the kind of promise from God that they would be reminded of when they would go to temple. It was God who'd promised to give them houses that they didn't even have to build, and the conquest they would take over. They would burn down three cities as a kind of offering to God. But then God would give them cities already there, fields already planted that they would not have destroyed. That's what God says again would happen after his people were scattered and taken out to captivity. In Isaiah 65, verses 21 through 23, God promises to bring that kind of restoration in those same kinds of terms. Isaiah 65, verse 21, "They shall build houses and inhabit them. They shall plant vineyards and eat their fruit. They shall not build and another inhabit. They shall not plant and another eat. For like the days of a tree shall the days of my people be, and my chosen shall long enjoy the work of their hands. They shall not labor in vain or bear children for calamity, for they shall be the offspring of the blessed of the Lord and their descendants with them." It will not be vain when God's people are restored and look and turn to him. And I don't think we should stop and think Isaiah is just talking about when Judah returned to Israel after Babylonian captivity, but we should look further and look to the people of the Messiah, to God's kingdom, and to recognize that God is giving us meaningful labor, blessings that go beyond what Israel ever would have imagined. Verse 2 of Psalm 128 again talks about the fruit of your labor. I just saw a strong contrast with that bread of anxious toil in Psalm 127 and then the fruits of your labor in verse 2 of Psalm 128. "You shall eat the fruit of the labor of your hands. You shall be blessed and it shall be well with you." Our work is vain if we don't do it by faith in the Lord for him, but our work is meaningful if we do it by God's strength and in service to him. You remember 1 Corinthians 15, verse 58, "Therefore, my beloved brothers, be steadfast, immovable, always abounding in the work of the Lord, knowing that in the Lord your labor is not in vain." Christians must not answer a generation of workaholics with a generation of laziness. We are given the ability to work from our God. Ephesians 4:28, and talking about people being transformed to be like Christ, it talks about a thief who will no longer steal, but instead is going to work hard so that he can not only provide for himself, but then share with others. God is the one who gives us the ability to work, and he is the one who gives us rest. We need to receive both of those things as gifts from God, as provision from God. We need to receive it and enjoy it. And that rest, that work and rest, are echoes of Eden and a shadow of eternal life. In some ways, some of the blessings described might not hit us the same way as it would have hit people in ancient times, because these psalms weren't written to Americans who have a standard of living that far exceeds any royalty in the ancient world. They were written to people with basic human sustenance, a simpler standard of living. And so it promises, generally, basic human sustenance. It talks about bread, right? Not cake, not brioche, bread. And sleep. Doesn't talk about air conditioning or modern mattresses, just sleep. And when God makes similar general promises in the New Testament, like in the Sermon on the Mount, Jesus addresses, you all are worried about what shall we eat, and what shall we drink, and what shall we wear. And God's going to take care of you with those basic human needs. Matthew 6:33 says, but seek first the kingdom of God and his righteousness, and all these things will be added to you. With just food and clothing, Paul talks about, well, that's all. We'll be content. Also notice in verse 2 of, sometimes I forgot to write which psalm, I guess it's, yeah, verse 127. For he gives to his beloved sleep. He gives to his beloved sleep. He calls us loved by God. And that's part of the emphasis that Jesus had in the Sermon on the Mount. God knows, your Father knows what you need before you ask him. He cares for you. God cares for us and provides for us. We need to recognize the work and rest that God gives and to seek it from God and to understand and trust him to provide going forward, not to be consumed with anxiety for what we'll eat or drink or wear the next day, but trusting him to provide. All right, we need to look at the positive angle on family and on children. The positive outlook on family there has some implications, though, for what it means to have a house built by the Lord. This is all presuming that we're a faithful family. That's what it even means for it to be a house built by the Lord. And that means that fathers, husbands, have a responsibility to lead their families to be faithful families. And we do that by recognizing that it's not the husband, father, who wears the pants in the family. But who is it? It's God. God. Fathers, husbands, we lead our families to see God as our father. God as our husband. Who is the man of the house? Paul in Ephesians and in Colossians takes the kinds of things that philosophers talked about in his day, about the household and how it runs properly. And he takes that kind of discussion, and whereas the philosophers would say the man of the house is in charge, the woman needs to look to the man of the house, the children look to the man of the house, Paul changes the way to talk about that, and he says the Lord is the one. Yes, he has a hierarchy of leadership and authority in the family, of fathers, husbands leading the family, but in every case, wives are doing things as to the Lord. Children are doing things in the Lord, because Jesus is the man of the house, not Mason, not the human father or husband. So we lead our families to trust the Lord and to follow Him. The wife in Psalm 128, in keeping with the covenant blessings in Israel, in that context, there is the general promise of fertility. And so remember, take that promise in light of what we said generally about these things is not guarantees for every individual, and looking to the greater promises that God has given us. The language of fruitfulness used there, I think, for the idea of fertility in Psalm 128 there, is also applied for God's people broadly. Fruitfulness in terms of righteousness and serving people. And looking at people who will take their role, their lives and be a father and mother, a brother and sister, to not just literal children, but to all God's people and to all who would receive it. Many a childless man and woman has taken others under their wing and been a father or mother to others. I think about Paul and how he keeps calling people my true child, and how he has that strong familial relationship. I think about what Jesus has said. When his own mother and his own brothers and family were trying to get connect with Jesus, and Jesus looks around and he says, this is my mother, my brother, my sisters. It's those who seek to do the will of God. That is the priority in the kingdom of heaven. And so there is that promise to be a fruitful vine for all of us. And then the imagery for children is encouraging. And when you're in the thick of parenting, these things are encouraging. And I think it's why some of the Psalm 127 especially is one that we probably wasn't obscure for you. Arrows. Like arrows in the hand of a warrior are the children of one's youth. Blessed is the man who fills his quiver with them. He shall not be put to shame when he speaks with his enemies in the gate. Children serve the mission. You serve and love them, and that obviously glorifies God. And they are equipped for the work of God's kingdom. Children are not in the Christian family for your pleasure. They are for the Lord. They're olive shoots. True, you know, presently not bearing fruit. But they will, Lord willing. They can, as the Lord builds the house. Trees, I said, are giving stable yields. These trees were handed down from generation to generation. An olive grove, what uses it to have a one generation olive grove? You're going to try planting trees and having a product? No, this is something, like a lot of businesses, handed down from one generation to the next. And so you've already got age-old trees. And these olive trees could live hundreds of years and continue bearing fruit. And you can graft on new branches. And so this promise, again, you think of literal children, and I think do find encouragement in that. But also think about the generations of God's people. Not just biological, but spiritual children and generations of God's people in that way. God promises blessing. And we have a positive outlook on the future of God's kingdom. The whole idea of children to come is to represent the future and God being with us. There's a tree, an olive tree, that is some 2,000 years old. They don't really know if it's 2,000, 4,000. I guess they don't know exactly how to determine it without maybe cutting it down, I guess. And it bearing fruit. It's crazy. They used some of the branches in some of the Olympics for like victory things. What do you call those? 2,000 years old. God's kingdom promises not all of us to have literal children, but does promise eternal life. And God's people serving him and glorifying him for eternity, bearing fruit before him. And so, in the city of God, as citizens of the kingdom of heaven, we have a confident future, and we need to be brothers and sisters to each other, and mothers and fathers to those who will enter this city. So to sum up, the Lord builds the house. May the Lord build our homes. May we be used in God's kingdom to build up his church. May he build up our homes lest we labor in vain. May we learn to enjoy the fruit of our labor, to work hard, to enjoy the fruit of our labor, and to rest and sleep as he's given us that rest, rather than to eat the bread of anxious toil. And may we sacrificially bear the burdens of those close to us, knowing that the least fruitful little one today, the little one in age and the little one in the faith, is loved by God and may well serve God's mission in the future. Peace be upon the Israel of God.